Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. My name is Kathleen Sabo. New Mexico has been in the news recently as a result of language diversity issues and events. Earlier this month, the state Supreme Court ruled that non-English speakers can be jurors. Several months ago, the national chain Whole Foods Markets revised its language policy in the wake of employee suspensions in Albuquerque. In the spring, high school athletes were warned and penalized for speaking Spanish during competition. And last week, a civil rights complaint was filed against the New Mexico Department of Workforce Solutions for providing essential online documents only in English. Can New Mexico be a bellwether for its handling of these issues when they arise? Today, we'll look at organizational challenges, legal requirements, and aspirations involving language diversity within our state. Joining me in the studio to discuss these issues is Maria Martinez Sanchez, a staff attorney with the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. And joining us by phone is James Lujan, assistant superintendent of Santa Fe Public Schools and former Albuquerque Public Schools Ernie Pyle Elementary School principal. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Yes, good morning. Joining us later by phone from Washington, D.C., will be the chairman and CEO of U.S. English, Mauro Mujica. So, James, I'd like to start with you. And just by saying, I read in this past Monday's installment of Santa Fe New Mexican reporter Robert Knott's regular column, Learning Curve, of language barriers encountered by parents attempting to register their children in Santa Fe's public schools. And there were claims that people were treated rudely because they only spoke Spanish. And there were reports that people had trouble getting vital information translated. And the column also reveals that there is concern on the part of Santa Fe Public School District leaders, administrators, and board members that people's language needs are not being met and that more can be done. As the assistant superintendent of Santa Fe Public Schools, I believe you actively supervise schools. Were you aware of these complaints, James?
Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning.
Absolutely. You know, I am now very aware of these concerns, and unfortunately, language barriers continue to exist within the educational institutions here in our state, especially. And I say unfortunately because, you know, we need to really partner with our parents, with our community members, and take these barriers away. We have a new administration at the Santa Fe Public Schools, and I truly believe and strongly believe that we are taking these barriers away. We believe in all our families, including our Spanish monolinguals and other languages that do exist there in Santa Fe Public School. So, yes, I was made aware of these, and we are making every effort to put our resources to make sure that these barriers do not exist.
Well, are you spending time on finding out whether these complaints have merit, or are you taking proactive measures to just assuming that they have?
Well, no, we are taking proactive measures. We do know that they exist, and what we are doing, we believe we're a district that believes in community forums. So we have community forums through our Parent Academy where we take those families, those parents that don't or didn't have a voice and now do. We want to build relationships, positive relationships with our parents first to let them know who we are. We are a parent-friendly district. We just had a couple of weeks ago for our first day of school, we had a parent gathering at the Santa Fe Mall, and we wanted to let our parents know that we are here to listen to them regardless of their English language knowledge or not. We are hiring even more bilingual resource teachers. We are hiring and skillful bilingual speakers from administration to directors and so forth. We are offering incentives to these people so that we attract these people because we see a dire need of bilingual staff for our bilingual parents.
Now, we're obviously bilingual. We're talking about English, Spanish. But what other languages do you encounter in the Santa Fe Public Schools?
That's a good question. Last week, as a matter of fact, we had a 14-year-old Chinese student who came from China, her and her parents, and she is attending one of our comprehensive high schools, and so she speaks Mandarin Chinese. And again, not that we have the resources fully right now of someone at the district level who speaks Mandarin, but we gathered our resources. We operate under a model called the SIOP model that are strategies for English language learners. And so together, our multicultural director, Mr. Robert Romero, and many of our directors got together to offer resources to this family, to this kid, through the principal. So we do have other languages, and diversity for us is something that we appreciate. Diversity is something that we want.
Okay.
So, yes.
All right, we're talking today about New Mexico's language diversity challenges. If you would like to join in our discussion, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on the Call In Show webpage at kunm.org, or you may call our local number, 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. We just heard from James Lujan, Assistant Superintendent of Santa Fe Public Schools, and now we're going to talk a little bit with Maria Martinez Sanchez. She's a staff attorney for the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. And Maria, you recently filed a civil rights complaint against the New Mexico Department of Workforce Solutions. Can you tell us with whom you filed that complaint and what led to the filing of the complaint?
Sure. Thank you, Kathleen.
Sure.
So the Center on Law and Poverty works on a host of different issues that affect people living in poverty in New Mexico. And one of those issues or areas are issues that affect low-income workers in New Mexico. So over the past several years, we have been working with low-income workers on wage theft, health and safety in the workplace, especially with agricultural workers. And through that work, we started noticing that the Department of Workforce Solutions, both the Labor Relations Division, as well as the Unemployment Division, was not having adequate language access to people that did not speak English. This comes in the form of people who are who have been victims of wage theft, trying to go into the office and file wage claims and being told that, you know, they have to do it in English and that if they were able to do that, to file their wage claims in English, the correspondence that comes back to them is only in English. So they're not able to understand what they're being told, understand that there's critical deadlines they need to meet. And then now with this new online unemployment system, it's only in English. So people that do not know English are unable to apply. So over the course of several years, actually, since 2010, we've been trying to engage with the department. We've sent letters. We've had meetings, telephone calls, in an effort to bring the department into compliance with federal language access laws. All of those efforts were not resolved the way we thought they should have been resolved. And so in the end, we had to file a complaint with the United States Department of Labor, who provides a significant portion of the Department of Workforce Solutions funds.
You say significant. It's about 95%, I read, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. A very small portion of Department of Workforce Solutions is funded by state money. And because of that, the state has to be in compliance with federal law, which is Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. Overall, we were just trying. We tried very hard. It was kind of a last-ditch effort. It wasn't by any means anything we took lightly, but it's something we felt we had to do in order to get the state into compliance.
You know, I'm curious. What do the federal laws require? Do they require a certain language translation be made of essential documents, or just services be made available to people who need them?
Sure. So when you have a certain threshold, a certain number, a percentage of your population that speak a language that's considered a high percentage, and I think it's anything over 5%. And in New Mexico, we have 15% of our population is LEP, which is limited English proficiency. Then you have to provide certain documents in that language as well as English. So we have by far surpassed the threshold amount that we need in order to justify having all of our documents and our essential services online in Spanish. However, that isn't happening. For other languages that aren't as common but are still spoken in the state, there's requirements that those people have language access, some sort of access, but it doesn't necessarily mean that every single document needs to be in that language.
Okay.
But they have to be provided some sort of access.
And now, is what you addressed in your claim, your complaint, just sort of the tip of the iceberg?
in terms of language diversity issues in our state government?
I can only speak for the Department of Workforce Solutions, okay. But I have heard of difficulties in the Department of Health and Human Services, I believe. And I know there's been problems with the MVD, and so I imagine it's the tip of the iceberg, but I'm just familiar with Department of Workforce Solutions.
Okay. Well, let's bring in our first caller this morning. It's Claudio from Los Lunas. He wants to talk about the problems in education. Good morning, Claudio. Welcome.
Good morning. I'll keep my comments short. Some of the problems in the language is the teachers themselves. I worked with a couple of teachers in the math department at a high school in Albuquerque. Their recommendation to another teacher was, you don't want to integrate Spanish because they don't have it in college. Yet the Highlands, New Mexico, and UNM both have extensive Spanish programs. They were in error, and it's difficult to overcome those barriers for the students.
Okay, stay on the line for a second, Claudio. James, would you like to respond to Claudio?
Absolutely. So I'm not sure if I understood his question correctly, but he's absolutely right as far as we need better development in our higher educational institutions. Not to put anybody down, but you know it's really important for our Spanish certified teachers, our educators, to receive that strong, there needs to be stronger programs, in my opinion, as well. I'm actually one of them. When I was a teacher, I went through a bilingual program through the university here within the state, and you know, it was really important for me to learn the accents and to teach grammar correctly and to teach the Spanish language arts to my kids. But you know what? I really did not get that quality education that I thought I would get. I had to actually learn on my own and do a lot of professional development, private tutoring and things like that to prepare me to be a good Spanish-speaking teacher.
All right, Claudio, any follow-up if you're still there?
Oh, yes, I'm still here. What I forgot to say was the two teachers, one was from South America and the other was from the Caribbean, and they were originally primary Spanish speakers. And I do see that a lot, where it's, look, here in America, speak English. And I don't agree with that because of the diversity of Spanish. So I'll leave it at that, okay?
All right, Claudio, thanks for your call this morning. And James, you know, just looking at the New Mexico Constitution and Article 12, Section 8, there's a requirement for teachers to learn both English and Spanish. Is that something that's still paid attention to in education circles?
Well, actually, the way I'm interpreting the law of the state is where Spanish and English, and people tend to forget this, is that here in the state of New Mexico, both are the official languages of the state. And so this highly encourages people to be bilingual. We are a bilingual state. And there are lots of, again, different dialects of the Spanish language. As a matter of fact, we work closely with the Embassy of Spain. We work with the Embassy of Mexico, and we do have teachers from Mexico and teachers from Spain that bring that rich diversity. And yes, you know, the language dialects are somewhat different, or very different, if you will, from the maybe traditional New Mexican Spanish that we hear. But again, the learning is happening in the Spanish language for our Spanish monolingual students. And what people a lot of times don't understand who are against bilingual education is that if they learn in their home language, they will learn a second language. In this case, it would be English, twice as fast. And it's based on research, Collier. It's based on research, and we see that it's very evident. And I've seen that as a teacher, as an administrator, and now as a district administrator.
If we're talking today about New Mexico's language diversity challenges, my guest today on the phone, James Lujan, Assistant Superintendent of Schools for Santa Fe Public Schools. And I have in the studio with me Maria Martinez Sanchez. She's a staff attorney with the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. If you would like to join in our discussion today, we would love to hear from you. There are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may call our local number, 277-5866, or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866 with questions and comments. We'll be back in a minute.
On the next, Making Contact.
To understand the March on Washington, you can't start on August 28, 1963.
50 years after the March on Washington, historians are still defining the legacy of the Civil Rights Movement and of Dr. Martin Luther King.
You can't understand the dream unless you've read the letter. And reading the letter gets you to the first half of the speech.
Friday morning at 8 on 89.9 KUNM.
Last month, the U.S. Secretary of the Interior announced that nearly $2 billion from the Cobell settlement will be used to buy back land for some tribes. The goal is to unify reservation land, but will buying back land and putting it into tribal trust strengthen sovereignty? Join us as we talk about the Land Buyback Program on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Good morning and welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. My name is Kathleen Sabo, and this morning we are talking about New Mexico's language diversity challenges. And we're going to go ahead and take a phone call here. Let's go ahead and take Glenn from Jemez Springs. Good morning, Glenn, and welcome to our conversation.
Thank you so much. Your last few call-in shows like this one have just been outstanding. I want to hold up the example of a young gringo, my son, 25-year-old, who's a graduate of Albuquerque High, where he studied Spanish, went on to his college in Minnesota, studied Spanish, got a Fulbright, went to Mexico, lived there for a year, used his Spanish, just finished a year in El Paso working with immigrants on the border with Border Servant Corps, and now has just landed a new job in Albuquerque, full circle. Spanish is so important. It's giving my son a job. It's allowing him to be a spokesperson for immigrants who are just so often shoved aside as human beings. And because we're in New Mexico, let's look at that second word, Mexico. We are in such a unique position, given our racist states either side, Arizona, Texas, and what they're doing to undocumented people and so on. Please, Governor, and others who are not allowing for this to be a unique state of all the 50 states, let's do everything we can to keep going as a bilingual state. Thanks.
Thank you so much for your comment this morning, Glenn. And Maria, what would you like to say to Glenn there? He had some good words.
First of all, Glenn, I'm a graduate of Albuquerque High, too. So it's good to hear. We have great graduates coming out of that school. I want to agree. I think, and the issue sometimes is lost on this just being an immigrant issue. And I just really want to highlight the fact that I love our immigrant brothers and sisters. They're part of us. They're part of our culture. But Spanish is also something that's part of native New Mexican history and culture and tradition. My family's from northern New Mexico. My dad's side is from Mora. And my grandma, you know, she's still, that's her native language. That's the language she feels more comfortable in. So this, for those that want to, you know, say that this is just an immigrant issue, it's not. It's a part of our history. It's a part of, I think, what we put out to the world. We're very proud of our New Mexican culture. We're proud that, you know, we have indigenous people here. We have Latinos and we have blacks. We have whites. But to kind of use it as a way to entice people to come to our state, but then at the same time not allow people that need services in Spanish to access vital resources in our state is a disgrace.
It's kind of ironic. You know, in preparing for the show, I spoke with a couple of Santa Fe school board members and once noted that there was a tension at times between the longtime New Mexico Spanish-speaking or maybe removed now from Spanish-speaking population and the immigrant population. Do you see that in your work as well, that tension can arise?
I see that in my life in general. I think it's something that I grapple with, that the state grapples with. But more and more, I'm seeing the Chicano and the immigrant community coming together and, you know, fighting off or working against these injustices. So I'm hoping that in the future we're not seen as, you know, native New Mexicans that have been here forever and the immigrants. We're all kind of one Latino population in this state, and we need to continue to work together.
Work together. Joining us by phone now is Mauro Mujica. He is the chairman and CEO of U.S. English in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Mauro.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. And you today?
I'm fine. Great pronunciation.
I worked on it. Mauro, we reached out to you from New Mexico because, frankly, you were the head of the first and maybe the only organization we could find that criticized the New Mexico Supreme Court's recent ruling that non-English speakers could serve as jurors. Can you please tell us about your organization's U.S.? Go ahead. Tell us about your objection.
Yeah, we are the largest organization regarding English as the official language. We have about 2 million members. We were created in 1983 by Senator Esai Hayakawa himself, a linguist, senator from California. He was very concerned that eventually, unless we make sure that immigrants learn English, that the country could be split up along linguistic lines, such as Canada and Belgium and other countries.
Okay, and before you proceed, let's go ahead and highlight the distinction that your organization makes. It's not English only that you are advocating.
I would be completely against. I speak four languages. I would be absolutely against something called English only. I speak Spanish at home with my American-born wife and who teaches Spanish and Spanish literature at Georgetown University, who's the author of Frida and many other books regarding Mexico and other countries. No, it's part of our life, the fact that we speak Spanish. We dated in Spanish. We speak Spanish at home. We speak Spanish with our children. We're not against any other language.
Well, then what is your position, then, of your organization? And then with regard to our Supreme Court ruling?
Right. The organization's position is that, you know, obviously anybody can speak any language they want at home. When it comes to functioning in a country that is a de facto English-speaking country, that it's better for immigrants and it's better for everybody to learn the language of the country so they can earn more money and they can function in this country, and they can sort of become part of the country fully, 100%, like I did, you know. This doesn't mean they cannot speak any other language they want.
Well, are you aware that there's a provision in our state constitution that says a citizen's right to vote, hold office, or serve on a jury cannot be restricted on account of religion, race, language, or color, or inability to speak, read, or write the English or Spanish languages? So the court was really just upholding our constitutional provision. Are you aware of that?
I'm very aware of that. And we are not against people who speak other languages to serve on the jury. And it was not criticism, what we said about the Supreme Court. It was an observation about the fact that jurors, how would they do this thing? I mean, if you have a juror that doesn't know any English in the juror box, what is he going to do? Is he going to have, he or she is going to have a translator, which we're not against having, but is that person going to have a translator full-time in the box or getting it through the ear or something? And what do we do if there is a juror that speaks, say, Chinese? Are they also going to have a translator translating everything? From personal experience, and Russian is my last language, and I'll tell you, it's incredibly difficult to get a translation that is equal to the original language.
Well, we've got an attorney right here with us in the studio, Maria Martinez Sanchez, a staff attorney with the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. So let's let her explain to us what does happen in the courtroom when there is someone who needs assistance.
Sure. Well, I'm by no means an expert on this issue.
Oh, and as I said, we're not against having translators.
Stop
having translators. How many do we have? And who checks the translation that is accurate?
I understand. So, Maria, go ahead.
I mean, what I've seen, there's especially for Spanish, there's tons of interpreters in the courts in New Mexico. I think if there's a question of translation, I think the appropriate thing to do would be for the person to stop and ask and make sure that the interpreter stop and ask, make sure they understood what whoever they were translating for was, that they understood it and convey that message to the juror.
Right, but the reality is that not all translators are good. Some are very good, some are very bad.
You know, that's true, but I mean, this is something that, you know, the founders of our state felt was important enough to include in our Constitution.
And I agree with it.
Yeah.
Not against it.
Uh-huh. Well.
Well, yeah. So then my question is, Mauro, to you, if a state is able to work out its language diversity challenges, is that still problematic for your organization or
no,
your members?
No, problematic. It's not problematic. It depends how they do it. As I said, if they want to have translators, probably the best thing would be to have, like in the United Nations, electronic translation. So the translator is not physically sitting in the juror box, but the translator is in a box some other place. And then the other physical problem is how do you deal with other languages. We have 329 languages in this country. I don't remember how many in New Mexico, but you may get a Chinese fellow who wants to serve as a juror. What do you do? Also provide translator?
And I believe that's what would attempt to be happened, and then I think an attorney has an opportunity to object. They need to object at the proper moment, and then that juror might be excused if the proper services were not
right,
able to be obtained.
But you just said that the juror is protected by the law to serve, and he could not be excluded only because he speaks a different language.
And I think people approach that reasonably, but maybe I'm ascribing too much.
And
go ahead,
I think that's what the Supreme Court said in their decision, was that, you know, we have to figure out a way to do this. This is part of our law, and, you know, we might have to be creative about it, but there's ways to deal with it.
Well, you certainly have to be creative, but I would recommend electronic translation, where the translators, one, two or more translators, are in a room separate from the jurors.
And that sounds great for us in New Mexico. It's always a question of funding. Let's go ahead and bring in a caller to our discussion here. It's Phil from Los Ranchos. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning. My comment is on a study that was done in Quebec when it was required that all English speakers learn French. And the one factor that predicted success in bilingualism was the attitude of the English speakers towards French people, Quebecois, and French language. I think that's relevant here because attitudes are very hard to change, but they're central to becoming really bilingual.
Oh, thank you so much for your comment this morning, Phil. James, you're there on the phone. We haven't heard from you for a bit. Would you like to comment?
Yes, actually, I agree with Phil. Absolutely. There are studies in regards to attitude, and we face that here in New Mexico. I want to go just a little back about the discussion having about the Chicanos. These are considered individuals of Hispanic descent who are born actually here in the United States, here in New Mexico, for instance. And then we have the Mexicanos, the immigrants who come actually descending from Mexico, who immigrate to the United States. So I have seen and taught actually in the classroom where I see the Chicanos and the Mexicanos have a different dialect of their Spanish language, which we do not say once correct or once incorrect. I mean, we do definitely correct the Spanglish, which means the code switching of this, you know, but we really praise and acknowledge the Spanglish. If there's a Chicano who speaks a certain way in Spanish and then throws a couple of English words, a lot of people from Mexico might say that is incorrect. I mean, they laugh at each other's Spanish, but it's about changing those attitudes that Phil said. We have to accept how we speak. And going back to the translation, I do agree that the translator should be certified. We should have correct translation. I remember President Fox, the former president from Mexico, when he came to Albuquerque, New Mexico, I was one of those individuals who was a certified translator for the state of New Mexico. I wanted to translate his speech, but again, when I was interviewed, I mean the wordings and the speech that he had, it was really impossible. It was really technical for me to actually translate him. So my translation of the speech was very limited. There had to come another person from Mexico to actually do the translation. So attitude and the correct translation are key.
If you would like to join in our discussion today, you may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may also post comments on the Collin Show webpage at kunm.org. We're talking this morning about New Mexico's language diversity challenges. We have Maria Martinez Sanchez in the studio, James Lujan on the telephone, and also Mauro Mujica from Washington, D.C. And I'm wondering, Maria and Mauro, if you'd like to comment on anything James or the caller said at this point.
Well, James is correct. You know, translating is incredibly difficult. I have tried doing it myself in different languages. The problem is that different countries, not only Mexico, people from Mexico and people who live in the States that are from Mexican, background, but in Chile, where I am from, you know, we can speak Chilean and no Mexican would understand what we're talking about. It's very difficult to translate accurately. And the problem in this case is the person being judged, you know, the person who is accused or the person who is being defended of a crime or something else in court needs to be sure that the jurors are going to be fair, that they're getting the entire picture of what's being said or presented in court. So it's not a matter of language only. It's a matter of being fair about the whole thing.
Okay, let's go ahead and bring in our caller. It's Isabel from Santa Fe who wants to talk about the jurors in the court system as well. Good morning, Isabel.
Good morning. My name is Isabel Guerra Max-Padden. I am a certified interpreter, both federally and state, certified in the state of New Mexico and Texas. And I would like to explain how it works when you don't have an English speaker in the jury room.
Great. Thank you for adding this.
Right. So, first of all, interpreters go through a rigorous training program here in New Mexico. And if you are federally certified, even more so. I am both. So what happens is every person that does not speak English, and we have had situations where you've had two non-English speakers, I'm sorry, I'm a bit nervous. You have two interpreters working per language, and I guess the gentleman, when he was talking about electronic translation, he means that we are using equipment, so we don't have to be sitting in the jury box. We can be sitting anywhere in the courtroom where we can hear and be heard. We have a transmitter, they have a receiver, they are hearing exactly everything that is being said. Again, we are trained, we go through a rigorous exam, we get past the exam, and then you can start working. We work in teams of two. And in the state of New Mexico, you will not allow anybody who is not a certified interpreter to work for a juror. We take an oath at the beginning of a trial, stating that we will interpret to the best of our abilities, but before we go into the deliberation room with the juror, we take another oath that states we will not be the 13th juror. We are just there to interpret. And it is true that sometimes something may get lost in the translation, but that is why we have two interpreters working in tandem, so that there is sort of a check and balance type of situation. So there's a lot more that I could say, but I just wanted to explain a little bit for the people who are not familiar in other states on how our system works. And I also would like to say something that has been mentioned before, and it is that it isn't just immigrants that come into this state that don't speak the language. It's people who have been born in the state that may speak another language as their first language. So that's all the comment that I wanted to make, and thank you very much allowing me.
Yes, Isabel, did you say that we are using electronic translation here in New Mexico already?
By electronic translation, I'm not sure exactly what the gentleman meant. What I understand it to mean, and what we are doing in every single state court and federal court in New Mexico, we have equipment that allows me to have a microphone that fits directly into the LEP person ear, because they have a receiver and headset. Therefore, it doesn't matter where we are sitting, anywhere in the courtroom.
They can hear us. That is exactly what I meant.
Okay.
Yeah, they can hear us.
That's correct.
So,
we also have the Santa Fe Public Schools have in our
board meetings, we do offer translation, and we have a certified translator there every board meeting. Again, for our IEP meetings, which have to do with special education, before kids get into special education, it's really important to have a certified translator there for the parent, because, again, we don't want to misinform any type of learning disability that happens within the school or to the parent about a kid. So, you know, from the court system to the school rooms, it's really important to have accurate translation. And, yes, we do use that equipment.
You use the electronic translation as well.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, that works very well with one type of individual and one type of language from a particular area. In this case, you're talking about Mexico or someone that was born in New Mexico. But for out of curiosity, what would you do if I'm sitting in the juror box and I speak in Chilean and I say that hicimos una guagua para comprar una burra? Do you have any idea of what I said?
Yes, I do. And that is exactly why you always have two interpreters, why the interpreters go through training, why we are required to have so many hours of continuing education.
Could you translate what I said? Hicimos una guagua para comprar una burra.
And this is from Chile?
Yes.
Hicimos una guagua means that's the bus transportation, correct?
No, that would be Cuban.
Yeah, and guagua in other situations means baby, but we're not here necessarily to discuss that. What I'm trying to point out...
Hicimos una guagua para comprar una burra means we collected money to buy a car.
What I'm trying to point out is that you will always have two interpreters working in tandem. Those interpreters have resources at their fingertips.
Of course.
When they are working.
My point is types of Spanish. How do you translate a guy that came from Chichicastenango in Guatemala, you know, who barely speaks Spanish?
Well, let me go ahead and ask a question before we continue. Mauro, is your time limited, or can you stay with us a bit longer?
Stay if you
want. All right. So let's go ahead. We're going to Isabel, let me go ahead and get you to just tell us what would happen if someone said, I'm from Chile and I need an interpreter.
Right. If you're not able to find somebody from Chile that happens to be a certified interpreter, then what happens, if I hear that sentence the gentleman has said and I'm absolutely clueless, what I would say is, Your Honor, the interpreter does not understand what the witness or what the juror or what the person has said. Can she please ask or rephrase or check with her colleague, or double check in a dictionary that they may have right there at the moment. There are ways of doing this. I realize that this might slow the process a little bit, but if what we are looking is communication, that is one way of doing it. The other thing is simply you may have to postpone the hearing or the trial or whatever is going on until you can locate a Chilean person. We often find ourselves, particularly with indigenous languages, where Spanish is their second language. And therefore, you may have to have relay interpreting, where you will have a person that speaks the indigenous language to interpret for this person, who then will interpret into Spanish, and you go back and forth.
Are you going to find a person who speaks Nahuatl, the language that a fellow from Chichicastenango in Guatemala would speak?
You may find them in California. You may find them on the East Coast. There are also other companies nationwide that provide telephone interpreting. So for those cases when you're not able to speak the language, an indigenous language, then you can contact these companies, and through telephonic interpretation, they will have interpreters for languages I honestly have not even heard of. So there are ways of doing it.
All right, and Isabel, we're going to go ahead and thank you for your call today, and thank you for staying on the line. And we need to take a quick break. We'll be back. We're talking today about New Mexico's language diversity challenges.
Generations of Black Americans have used the power of words to fight for freedom.
Because if you're Black, you should be thinking Black. And if you're Black and you're not thinking Black at this late date, well, I'm sorry for you.
Since 1619, Negroes have tried every method of communication.
Say It Loud, Great Speeches on Civil Rights and African-American Identity, a new documentary from American Radio Works.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
The Southwest Women's Law Center and New Mexico Legal Aid have teamed up with the New Mexico Consumer Assistance Program in the Office of the Superintendent of Insurance to provide information about consumer rights and resources under the Affordable Care Act. On October 1st, uninsured community members can begin to sign up. Find out more by calling the insurance hotline at 1-855-857-0972. A message from the tax-exempt Southwest Women's Law Center.
We're back with the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and we're talking about New Mexico's language diversity challenges. We've got callers stacked up, but Maria Martinez Sanchez, you wanted to ask Mauro a question, did you not?
Yes, I did. The majority of the focus of this conversation has been on jurors, and it was a good conversation, but I would like to know from you, Mauro, what your organization's position on state agencies providing services in languages other than English, especially in a state like New Mexico, where we have such a high percentage of non-English speakers.
Right. We have provisions in the laws that we have passed in 31 states and in bills in Congress right now, with many exceptions. We fully realize, especially because I'm the chairman and the CEO of U.S. English. I want to make sure we don't leave anybody out of the system. We have provisions so that if people need translations, they can get translations.
Okay.
You know, if I go to an office in New Mexico and I speak Spanish to a fellow that I pretty much know will be able to answer in Spanish, we're not against it.
Okay, so for example, here in New Mexico, we're having this issue with Department of Workforce Solutions not providing their online application in English for people who are seeking unemployment benefits. These are, you know...
You mean in Spanish?
I'm sorry, yes. In Spanish, these are, you know, a lot of them are low-income people. These are people who can't pay their rent, who are struggling, and they're needing these services. Is your position that that application online should not be in languages other than English?
Well, you're talking about something that is incredibly difficult to talk about, because in the case of New Mexico, yes, it's obvious that the main problem is with Spanish speakers. But this country is huge, so we have to take a position that deals with the whole country. We have 329 languages in the country, so are we going to translate absolutely everything into 329 languages? There has to be, and we cannot make the decision, the state has to make the decision, up to which point do you stop translating and when do you begin spending money in teaching English to these people who really need the language.
Okay, but so say we're just asking for Spanish. Are you okay with that?
It depends on what it is. Our exception says clearly that it's something important that has to do with health or other problems, general problems, that it could be written in a different language.
Okay, well, let's go ahead. We have an email comment from Colleen. She is multilingual. She's a Native American. And she says that using only English for U.S. official functions reinforces institutionalized racism. In New Mexico, where we have the first Latina governor, Susana Martinez, she should be reprimanding departments for not providing equal services. And I believe Colleen may be a caller as well, if it's possible to get Colleen on the line, get our engineer. Colleen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Was that your email comment that I just read?
Yes, it was. I just wanted to make sure it got through somehow.
Well, absolutely. Is there anything else you would like to go ahead and add to what you said?
I just wanted to say that the jury should reflect the community. This is the reason why, you know, in places like South Dakota, Leonard Peltier was convicted by an all-white jury, why Zimmerman was convicted by a mostly white jury. It's just a reinforcement of basically what I would refer to as the white man's law, being a Native American, and that's something we've had to deal with. You know, if there had been people like this person who came over from Russia, You know, why didn't they learn Native Americans? Because we were the first people. So if they want to talk about a single language or even the number of languages that he's talking about is incorrect because he's not taking into account the 575 federally recognized tribes. So add that to your 329 languages that exist in the United States. So in my, where I grew up, my grandma only speaks Navajo, and my parents are multilingual. They speak more than one language. And so I think the more diversity you have in languages, the greater capacity you have to understand concepts. There are concepts that cannot be translated, but it just shows the degree of thought that can go into ideas that white men does not have. And I'll just leave it at that.
All right. And Mauro, I know you wanted to say something. I'd love it if you'd please wait till our caller is done speaking. How do you want to respond? Go right ahead.
What I'm saying is that Native American languages are protected by federal law. So she's wrong thinking that they need to be protected. They already are protected.
Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and bring in a caller, Jim from Albuquerque, who disagrees. So go right ahead, Jim. We'd love to hear your viewpoint.
Yeah. My comment is I'm from a Hispanic family in New Mexico, and I'm actually in a position where my Spanish is not as good as my English, but I've also traveled with the military throughout the world and also been to business school. But the issue I have is that English, I had to master English in the seventh grade, but English is the international language of business. And so for any, I think a lot of people don't even make the effort to learn English. And that's my problem. I have some neighbors. They do not make an effort to learn English. They don't. If they can get by with just Spanish, that's what they do. But they hurt themselves by not learning English. And I understand wanting to translate, you know, for legal purposes and everything. People get stuck in a position. They haven't had time to master English or whatever. But trying to translate 135 different languages for court, I think that's a pretty heavy burden.
Well, Hang on there, and let's. James, are you still on the line?
I am.
How would you like to respond? I'll get you, Mauro. Let me get James.
You know what? That is an important point. You know, we don't want to. Let me give you an example. My sister-in-law has been in the United States for 20 years. Her English is very, very limited. She's taking her time to learn it. She's taking. The problem, though, is that. You know, there are not a lot of resources so that she could learn the English. You know, more and more, I'm very proud to say that more and more school systems are, within their schools, are developing programs for English language learners. So there are parents who attend these programs to learn English. We need to really focus and emphasize on that. Sometimes, you know, there might be that small population that say, well, there's Spanish billboards. We have a lot of Spanish speakers, you know. There's no need for me to learn English. And many times a lot of society might view that as we're handicapping our Spanish-speaking population by providing all the Spanish, you know, from them learning English. But you know, I say that there's still not enough resources. We need to help our Spanish speakers learn English, and not just our Spanish speakers. I mean, we have our Native Americans that we can't forget about. I mean, I worked in Bernalillo Public Schools as well, where we have Quetes. Quetes is not even a written language. It's an oral language. And many of these kids come from strong homes where they just speak Quetes, and they need to learn English as well. But again, at the same time, it's not that they don't want to learn. It's because the resource isn't there. It's because that support isn't there. It's because that relationship isn't there. So there are things that impede that to happen.
All right. And Mauro, you wanted to comment as well?
Yes, I fully agree with the last two speakers. I mean, the problem is that in this country, because of the number of Spanish speakers, is that sometimes the attitude is that English is optional. And really, English is not optional if you want to succeed in this country. You have to make an effort. And I understand that sometimes it's very difficult. I also agree that there are no resources, enough resources to teach English to anybody. And that's a federal problem that the government should look at. And I would say the Internet has many free courses. Actually, we have one in our own website, at www.usenglish.org, is a free course to learn English. It is a problem. I understand it is a problem, but you know where is the money? The only people that have this money is the people who take our money in taxes, and those are the local governments and the federal government.
Maria, you want to comment?
See,
as well?
Just very quickly, I wanted to add that I think, speaking to Jim's point about his neighbor not wanting to speak English, I really do feel like those are those people are in the minority. The vast majority of the people I work, many of whom are immigrants, really want to learn English. They're embarrassed that they don't know English. They're trying to learn English, but it's a long process. And in the meantime, we have to be able to provide those people with the services that they need in the language that they're comfortable in.
And Clifton, you've been holding online for a long time here. If you have a brief comment, we'd love to include you in our conversation. Good morning, Clifton.
It's been a great conversation. You know, I had a brief comment, but goodness sakes, after all, everything. So the first thing I want to say is Isabel and the folks that she works with are running a heck of an interpretation program. My original comment was to note that there was a Chinese woman from Taiwan currently living in California who came out to New Mexico to take our translator-interpreter program. That's how strong we are and how progressive we are in the matter. The other thing is that there's been a lot of talk about translation, and as Isabel would point out, one of the issues is interpretation, and that was Mauro's comment about the Wawa and the Burro, you know, is how do you interpret that? And I had the opportunity to work in advertising where we see that all the time, where somebody means to say the wrong direction and they say in an inappropriate manner and things of that nature. So this has been a fascinating discussion. To the people who think that we ought to have to learn English and we should never speak foreign languages, I say boo on you. You ought to learn a foreign language and get over your, you know, whatever kind of phobia that is. And at the same time, I realize it's unrealistic to be able to provide all of these translation interpretation services, you know, as Mauro pointed out, based on the simple fact of money. Great show today.
Thank you for holding, Clifton. And Mauro, now you've heard a lot of callers here from New Mexico as well as our panelists. And we thank you for joining us from Washington, D.C. So briefly, what do you want to say to people here in New Mexico, you sitting there in Washington, D.C. and having heard our conversation?
I'll tell you, first of all, I think they live in a wonderful place. I'm an architect. I'm also a photographer. I would love to go there to photograph New Mexico. Yes, it's a very complicated problem, and I deal with it every single day. What we have to do is pressure the government, the local government, and the federal government to provide the money to teach English to the new immigrants that, yes, it is true, most of them want to learn English. They know they need English in order to succeed.
And James, you've sitting there having heard all this conversation as well, and I'm sure you hear this and more in your position. Tell us what you're thinking after having participated in this conversation today.
Well, I am very, very, very happy and proud of people and leaders such as not just the callers, but also people who are right now live in the show for even taking on this endeavor of helping those people who don't or didn't have a voice come to the table. Again, from the court systems to the school classroom, I am very happy that we could work together. I mean, there's just one color of blood. We're all human beings, and you know, the diversity is something that Santa Fe Public Schools appreciate, and we acknowledge and we praise. And so again, we want to make sure that we're working together. We as a school system cannot do it by ourselves. As a court systems here in the state, they can't do it by themselves. We need our indigenous people. We need different perspectives, different views. So I thank you for the show. I thank you for the conversation. It has been not only an eye-opener for me, but I will take it back to my constituents so that our children here in the state of New Mexico will reap those benefits.
Thank you, James. And Maria, we'll look forward to hearing what happens with the complaint, the civil rights complaint. Thanks to our guest today, Maria Martinez Sanchez of the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty, James Lujan, Assistant Superintendent of Santa Fe Public Schools, and the Chairman and CEO of U.S. English, Mauro Mujica, for making themselves available to our listeners. Thank you all. And thanks to our callers for helping to develop our discussion today. Thanks Thanks to our engineer, Roman Garcia, our assistant producers, Michael Hess and Steve Emmons. Andy Lyman has handled our phones today. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show on KUNM, news and music that connect from the University of New Mexico.